Yeah, welcome to the Young Turks, everybody. I thought Anna was gonna take it away. She has this graphic thing that has like all of our promotions on it, and I thought that was her gonna do it. I was so feverishly preparing so that I wouldn't mess up any of the facts today.
Would you agree that you blew the open then?
100%. Yeah,
I apologize. Maybe we should have hashed that out prior to the show beginning. Brett is leading hour one today, and I will be leading hour two.
Welcome to the Young Turks. I'm like,
it's going to be a good one today, I feel.
Yeah, it is going to be a good one. We have great stories for you. Later on, Ida Rodriguez will join us. You guys are in for a lot of really great stories, including members of the Secret Service coming forward and kind of sharing their frustrations with, you know, having to protect Trump and his family, which I think is super interesting. But before we get to all of that, let me go ahead and make a few announcements for everyone. Just a quick note, TYT did win another Webby Award thanks to you guys. Since you went out there and you voted for us, we were able to lock down an Audience Honor Award for, no, I lied. This was not a Webby Award, it was a Shorty Award.
I thought we also won a Webby though.
We did win a Webby, which is why I got mixed up.
Yeah,
we're fucking everything up today. That's what's happening.
3 days ago when the Webby was won,
yeah,
this happened.
Yeah, so we got a Shorty Award for Best in Overall YouTube Presence. Look at that.
That's nuts, I've never won one of those.
Got the Shorty logo, the whale's tail.
Yeah, I like strange. It. I like it.
It's wait, do I win that? Is that mine now?
You can list it in your resume, I think.
Yeah, I already have, but do I deserve it?
Probably not. Not with that intro to the show.
You're going to talk to Shorty Award winner Brett Ehrlich that way?
I won my own Webby once, and I also want someone to go back and find the screen grab of when we looked at each other in panic at the beginning of the show, because I want that. I want that locked down. Maybe that'll win the Webby next year.
Okay.
Amazing.
One other quick announcement before we get to the stories. As you guys know, we are participating in trying to mobilize people in some political activism. So there is the Climate March and also the Resistance Rally, and for those of you who are interested in participating, you can sign up. Let's take a look at the graphic. You sign up for text or email alerts at tytnetwork.com/resistance. You will find all the information necessary for these marches. You wait to receive a text message about Climate March and the Resistance Rally, and then you respond accordingly to RSVP for either one of those events. If you guys are interested and want to find more, please go to that website and check it out. And I want to thank you in advance for participating in this. It's really important.
Awesome.
Cool.
Michael, nice to see you.
It's good to be here.
Is it weird that the war room is back in action right now? The two of us from...
That's everybody's thinking that. They look at this panel and they think, my God, is this the war room?
Awesome. Are you guys ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Even my mother wouldn't look at that.
Mom, you're watching, right?
Right.
All right, let's get into it. Just really moments after saying that he was going to tear up NAFTA and pull out completely, President Trump has reversed course. According to a statement from the White House, President Trump agreed not to terminate NAFTA at this time, and the leaders agreed to proceed swiftly according to their required international procedures to enable the renegotiation of the NAFTA deal to the benefit of all three countries. That's where we are right now. Talking Points Memo says the statement from the White House followed two reports that Trump advisors had essentially gone so far as to draft an executive order to withdraw the United States from NAFTA.
Well, you know, the thing is, Trump is an open-minded guy, and he actually looked into NAFTA after saying that he would pull out and realized, you know, it's actually really complicated. Who would have known that it's actually really complicated?
No one would have known.
No one would have known.
He couldn't even get a 10-minute briefing about NAFTA like he did about China and North Korea. That would have helped, right?
It would have helped. Or just reading something, anything about NAFTA would have helped.
It's so weird, but I think it's baked into like his persona and his approach to everything. He is forgiven for all of these brash, overt moves that he just kind of comes up with and says to get a feel. He's throwing spaghetti on the wall all the time, and it seems like it excuses it somehow.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
Look, I don't want anyone to misunderstand the way I'm responding to this story. I don't think that NAFTA is perfect. I think that it is flawed in many ways. It has had some unexpected, unintended consequences for both the United States and Mexico, and I'm sure to some extent Canada as well. I mean, for instance, you know, we produce so much cheap corn, and we're now, you know, exporting it to Mexico. And think about what's happening to all the farmers in Mexico who relied on their corn crops. So it's not just America suffering and everyone else is doing well. There are negative ramifications for everyone involved, but there are also positives. It is a complicated issue. And someone like Donald Trump continuously makes strong statements about various policies and then later doesn't actually follow through because he makes uneducated, ignorant statements about these policies or about these issues. And that's what's problematic here. It's not just about NAFTA, it's about every political issue that he has gotten involved in.
Yeah, that's true. And he's a guy who doesn't see the gray area and so much of what happens in politics, in life, and certainly when you're talking about as something as specific as free trade, happens in the gray area. And to, you know, he was advised by Bannon. He was advised by that guy who's the trade union guy, Navarro at the White House. He's not at the White House, but he's with the trade union.
The National Trade Industrial Council.
The Industrial Council, yeah. They'll say, of course, it's in their best interest to say, let's get rid of this. Bannon's a PR guy. The trade council guy, of course, he wants to get rid of it just like that. But so many people's lives count on this free trade agreement that it's naive. Dismantle it. But do it in a reasonable way. Don't pull out of it. Fix it. Yeah. Address it. It's not going to be perfect. When Clinton put it in, it wasn't going to be perfect. I remember Gerald Ford, who himself was president for a while, he wrote an editorial in one of the papers around the time NAFTA, supporting NAFTA at the time. And people were saying, well, he's an old guy at that point. It's going to really hurt because it's a former president, it's a Republican, and Clinton doesn't want to align himself. It turns out that he did. But in any case, they all predicted things that were going to be problematic with NAFTA. So rather than just fix it, Trump is doing what Trump does, saying it's either black or it's white. Mm-hmm. In his case, he preferred it be white. and he just wants to get rid of it. And now cooler heads have to prevail in more cases than they have with Trump. And it seems that they have to a degree. And so now Peña Nieto and Trudeau, who have a grasp of this sort of thing, maybe even more so than Trump does, even though they weren't dealing it. But what I mean is that from the business side of it, mm-hmm, too, you'd expect that he would come in with some kind of, intuition on the business part of it, which they seem to be outshining him on there, which, if you have one thing that you can say about Donald Trump, maybe he knows this.
Yeah.
A tiny little bit. I mean, he's gone bankrupt a lot. But.
So what effect do you think this procedure of, pull out a TPP, say I'm going to pull out a NAFTA, and then suddenly I'm going to renegotiate it. What effect does that kind of behavior have on the negotiation process?
Well, it helps him with voters, if you want to talk about that. I mean,
helps him with voters?
Yeah, it helps him live up to what those voters who were Midwest union blue collar white Americans, mm-hmm, who had soured on Clinton, soured on the Democrats, soured on being taken for granted. This is a promise to them in a weird way that they're going to like. Now, it doesn't matter what they like. Brett's question was, what's it going to matter to the deals, right?
How's the deal going to go?
Yeah, I mean, the deal will be handled carefully over a long period of time, and we're not going to get results. Like, Donald Trump wants everything to be decided tomorrow. We're not going to know we're not going to pull out of NAFTA.
Yeah, three presidents worked on NAFTA.
Exactly.
Three, it was Reagan, Bush, and then finally Clinton.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I looked at the vote to pass NAFTA, and it was 30, in the Senate, it was 34 Republicans and 27 Democrats, and which it kind of reflects how it would have to be. It's just such a weird alignment that we have now, because you have a Republican president who wants protectionist trade policies. Mm-hmm. If he gets that passed, he's going to be appealing to, labor unions on the left,
right,
and staunch Republicans on the right who want free trade. Meanwhile, the folks who are negotiating this are like Wilbur Ross, who's just old money all the way.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, I don't know how it's going to come off.
Well, but you won't know for a while. It's going to take forever.
Yeah, you're right. But I do want to push back a little bit on how this is going to help him with voters. Because remember, the people who voted for him were individuals who loved his tough talk on everything, right? And everything that he said he was going to do, he has either failed in doing or has completely switched, his policy ideas in regard to them.
Yeah.
So he failed when it came to healthcare. He's failed when it comes to the Muslim ban. He's failed when it comes to, stripping states that have sanctuary cities of federal funding. Like, he keeps failing. He keeps running into these roadblocks. And I don't know. I don't know if that's resonating with his supporters at all or if it's really like starting to hit a nerve with them, but
you're right. I mean, maybe I misspoke a little bit, but I'm not saying it's going to help him overall with voters. Mm-hmm. But there are single issue voters who voted for Donald Trump this time, who are, you know, in manufacturing and agriculture trade unions, who really are pissed off about free trade, right? Mm-hmm. Pulled out of TPP. Great. Yeah. I mean, we'll never know what would have happened had he lost with TPP. But we certainly know that these voters want him to pull out of TPP. And the fact that he's rejecting NAFTA has, and I'm sure that's why Bannon's behind it, has this political bonus for him, which mm-hmm. is, like you said, odd that he is now, I mean, I wouldn't say the trade unions are so far to the left, but still, that he's talking to union people and trying to appease them by pulling out of a protectionist, agreement, I think is interesting.
And there has been talk specifically about the TPP framework, the things that Mexico agreed to within the TPP kind of being the kinds of things that they would talk about in negotiating NAFTA, mm-hmm. Like what is it? And everything being on the table, using this as a way to leverage immigration. And yeah. I don't know, there's so much that can happen. All I know is that the only thing that Trump can do unilaterally is like tweak an individual tariff on an individual product, and even then it's not clear. But if he does that, that sounds like it's more in line with what he's done before, mm-hmm. which is to go look at a list of jobs that have moved to Mexico, pick an individual industry affected, switch the tariff a little bit on that, and mm-hmm. declare victory for 30,000 jobs.
Right. I like that you brought up a little bit of the international relations component of this, because it also shows another flaw in the way that Trump handles things. Because on one hand, you'll hear him, you know, saying some pretty unsavory things about Mexico's president in regard to building the wall and immigration and all that. So he'll say offensive things. He'll just kind of speak off the cuff without really thinking about it ahead of time or strategizing ahead of time. And then stuff like this comes up and he wants to renegotiate NAFTA. Well, you need to have some diplomacy in the way that you handle your interactions with world leaders. And he doesn't seem to understand that. He's been so used to getting what he wants and being given everything that he wants that he's just, I feel like he's blindsided sometimes. Like when, you know, the federal judges block him from doing what he wants to do in his executive orders, he seems like befuddled. Like,
Right.
He just doesn't know the rules.
Yeah. That bolsters your point. You get the feeling that it's not just with international leaders, it's with the Congress, it's with the courts, right? So you get the feeling that like Peña Nieto and Trudeau picked up the phone with, like, what the fuck is this guy doing, right?
Yeah.
You know? And you get the feeling that leaders in Congress are doing that with themselves. Both Republicans, I'm sure Ryan and McConnell have had late night conversations that are really dull, but where mm-hmm. they're saying the exact same, well, we don't know how to deal with this, you know,
but that's,
and that's what's happening. So I think that you're absolutely right, and it happens at home too, not just in the world.
There was an awesome piece in the New York Times arts section one weekend where they interviewed the writers and executive producers on political dramas and comedies. And Shonda Rhimes, who's behind Scandal in addition to a bunch of other stuff, she said the thing I'd be most interested in writing is the people, since you have a president who has no idea how the government works, is the story of the people behind the scenes who are the smart ones who can figure out how to be the ones who fill in the blanks in his head. And there are a lot of them.
Yeah. Are there, though? Because he seems to have surrounded himself with sycophants, right?
Well, we'll see. But that's the thing, is it's a mixture. That alchemy is a mixture of being a sycophant, making him feel like he's bigger than you and more and way better than you, but still planting those seeds in his head.
Because his campaign was run like that, and there seemed to be an absence of those people. So the presumption there's someone there at the White House now doing it seems, you know, dubious.
But the idea that there's people like Bannon, who is like, I want to write this declaration that we're pulling out of NAFTA. And then he's been overstepping his bounds, like getting himself on the cover of Time magazine, getting someone to, you know, death to be him on Saturday Night Live, which are the kinds of things that make Trump just want to smack you down into your place.
Yeah.
It's the ones who are able to say, and it seems like it's the generals now who are the ones who are saying, you know, you can bomb stuff up. And that's awesome, and that makes you pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you want to play, it's yours. It's yours, go do it.
Which is scary.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to healthcare.
Let's pull out of the NAFTA story.
Let's yank it.
Yeah.
All right. The GOP is moving to kill an exemption for Congress in their healthcare bill. Now, it was reported on this show yesterday that there was a new version of the healthcare bill put forth. And it had some waivers for people in Congress to pull out of it. They said the amendment would have allowed states to seek waivers for certain Obamacare regulations, but the lawmakers and their staff would be exempt from the changes. And then Democrats fired back with tweets like this from the DCC, DCCC, saying, "How could I got lost in how many C's there are?" The D70Cs. How convenient House Republicans are exempting themselves from their appalling Obamacare repeal plan, say no, basically saying it's not good enough for them, but it's good enough for you. Now, folks on the Hill are saying they're going to remove that amendment or reword it so that the members of Congress can't pull out of it. This from Representative Tom MacArthur, who wrote the amendment, saying that'll be fixed. It was written in to comply with some Senate rules to make sure it's a budget vote. Now,
okay.
So the idea being a budget vote is filibuster proof. If you make it more of a legislative non-budget vote, then you need to get 60 votes within Congress. Right there, do you trust him? What do you think about this reaction?
Well, they're doing it, so I trust them. I mean, right. Whatever their motivation, I don't know. I'm always sort of skeptical of the motivations of people who are, you know, Leonard Lance, the congressman from New Jersey, Republican, saying this is the height of hypocrisy. Why is this the height of hypocrisy?
Yeah, the hypocrisy has been around for a while now.
Why did they pick this? I mean, this to me seems a hypocritical, but why do you stop here when there's so much hypocrisy? Why did you not talk about this with Merrick Garland? Where were you, Leonard Lance? You didn't have a vote on it. Why don't you say this is hypocritical? But I believe it. They're doing the right thing here. The exemption was insulting, and it shouldn't have been in there. And Republicans saying, "Well, you're right," and it was because of getting blowback, right? Mm-hmm. It was because, first of all, a lot of them didn't read it in the first place, so
right.
They didn't know. But once they did, and once smart people did, they said, "Well, you're really going to do this?" They said, "No, that's terrible."
How do you not read something that you are going to vote on or have your name on?
Well,
like that's the thing. Are they really that busy?
Yes. No. I mean, I'm serious. Mm-hmm. I'm not here just to defend these people because mm-hmm. they should in many cases. They have legislative assistants who do a lot of the reading. These bills are sometimes so overwhelmingly big, and that's mm-hmm. a big part of government that's problematic is that they don't have time to read it because they're out raising money a lot of the
time.
Yeah,
well,
right?
that's the big problem.
That is a big problem. It always goes back to money in politics. But what they're doing with this is. What will happen is somebody's going to find something. A legislative aide in some congressperson's office is going to find something. They're going to say this is a red flag. We have to deal with it. We have to look at it. Or they're going to point it out to the media, and then it's going to come back to them. They don't have time to read every single. It's like when you went to school. You know, mm-hmm. you didn't have time to read every word of every textbook. And it's a little like that. I know they're paid to do it. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying it is an overwhelming. There isn't enough time in the day for anyone to read an entire healthcare bill.
Look,
proposal.
Right now, when it comes to
just an amendment, Michael.
When it comes to passing laws, you know, I just can't imagine, especially under this current political system where you do have to spend all this time fundraising. So you're not really a representative, you're a fundraiser, right? And then you have these congressional aides helping you out. I can't imagine trusting anyone. I don't care how good this congressional aide is. I can't imagine trusting anyone enough to just give me a briefing on what the proposed legislation is. They have to under this current political system. I totally understand that. But look, right now, I'm going through a big life change that I don't want to get into specifics for. It requires a lot of paperwork, right?
Yeah.
And I know that in most cases, people will get these huge stacks of paperwork, all of these contracts, all of these agreements, and they'll just be like, okay, just tell me where to sign. I'm going to move on
it's
with my life.
It's just signing your own name is so fun. That you don't want to read it. You're just like, give me another chance.
Got these pens to get out. The other thing, though, here is that's why there are committees. So if you are on the committee that's dealing with this, damn right you should be reading it, right? But if you're on this subcommittee and X subcommittee and you're just a member of Congress and there's an omnibus trade bill coming and that's not what your committee is doing, then you do have people in your office that are going to read that. And you don't have time to read that. But if you're on this committee, you really should be reading it. I think a lot of them do. I mean, I would imagine most of them or the newer ones do anyway.
I just wish Congress had more recesses just to like relax because of all this heavy reading that they're doing.
They sound like
they all had a place in Florida where they could go every weekend just to read legislation.
It's troubling because it's like how much of this feels like cut and paste. They just added this like, budget thing, cut and paste that thing where Congress can pull out. And that's it. And then they just move on. And the danger here is we just you know, the folks that gave blowback on this were calling out like a technicality. Yeah. The rest of this whole thing remains. Mm-hmm. And the pain of it is, like, it's so easy to pull out, to point out something like this, which is like, Congress doesn't even like it. And it's so difficult to get into the deeper issues that are at stake. So those waivers are still on this amendment, waivers like in graphic 6, regulations that require insurers charge everyone the same amount of premiums regardless of medical condition, and another requirement that mandates what services insurers must cover. This is what, you know, they can waive, states can waive, so there's no longer necessarily de facto protections for people with pre-existing conditions, mm-hmm. or a list of things that insurance must do, so you can end up being covered but not actually being covered for anything. These are still in the bill.
Right. Well, these are for 6 years now, Democrats have been asking for a response from Republicans on Obamacare. They're getting it now, and it's not flying. Republicans aren't liking it. Democrats aren't liking it. Even the White House is saying, well, we'll have to wait and see.
Right. There's still speculation that this won't pass.
Right. There's more than speculation.
It's not going to pass.
It's just so interesting to me that, you know, our elected officials will continuously smack talk healthcare in countries like Canada, right? And they'll always say things like, oh, the wait time is terrible. It's funny because I very rarely hear negative things about Canada's healthcare from people living in Canada, but we hear it a lot from our elected officials. Okay, so what is your answer to make healthcare better in America, to make it even better than what it is in Canada? To create waivers so people don't have to cover certain things in, you know, the health insurance plans? That's a better plan for you? It's just all so disingenuous. We know where it all comes from. We know that it has nothing to do about representing the people, looking out for their health and their, you know, their families and, you know, making sure that they thrive. It's all about ensuring that they save money for these health insurance companies. Right now it's a privatized system and that's it. You know, I mean, we've expanded Medicare and all that, but it's our Medicaid expansion. Right. But it's not enough. It's not enough. And all they want to do is strip away what little protections we have.
What's going to happen? They're going to vote this down, it seems. Then what? Does it just disappear? Was this something that they just needed to get put into a news reader's hands before the 100 days was up?
One of the things that could happen is it could backfire on Donald Trump, because these Republicans who go back to their elections in 2018 are going to have to find some foil. And when they find that foil, the only person they can point to is Donald Trump. And this is one of the ways that I predicted, and a lot of people have predicted, not just me, that Trump is going to go down, is when Republicans start going after him. Well, they come back in their district, wait a second, we elected you to Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare. We can't vote Donald Trump out now, but we certainly can vote you out now. And they can say, well, I tried, but the White House was just intransigent. We had this plan. We had this put in place. The Democrats and the White House were working together. Boom. So that's what can happen. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But if they don't have anything, the Republicans have a defense at the ballot box that the president doesn't, because he doesn't have to face them yet.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we got a lot of cool stuff. Cocaine in your pants. Huh? Stick
hey,
around.
What?
No, it'll make you do the boogie dance. Welcome back, everybody. See, I was there to pick it right up when we came back.
That was really good.
You've gotten so much better in like a half hour.
It really is. It's that kind of experience. It's only been 10 years I've been working before the camera. And today I learned how to do it.
I've been working 10 years since, like, literally before the camera, before there was a camera.
Yeah. Michael's been in this for a while.
Long time.
You also have some tweets for us.
I do have tweets. TYT Live, hashtag TYT Live is where you'll find some of these. Trump is slowly learning that all those right-wing talk radio talking points are pretty fucking unrealistic / dumb. Yeah, I think, but I don't know that he's learning it. He's figuring it out, but I don't know what he's learning. But it's a good point, you know. I mean, but whatever it is, it is slow too. Jess Ray here. Trump's base will still hold on to him because they will blame the establishment for his inability to get things done.
Republicans were unwilling to work with him on health care and all. I mean,
right.
Okay. Well, that's what they're saying. Yeah,
he's a populist.
Oh, well, yeah, that's
and
right.
And they're all right. Old.
That's why, like, the money Jeb first. Bush, the Jeb Bush side of things, right? Owner of the Miami Marlins, Daniel Pareja. They don't have time to read bills. They're too busy calling donors. We did allude to that,
yeah.
There's a real problem with that. I mean, it's not just to blame the members of Congress. It's the system that's at fault with that. I just remember talking to one congressperson who said, I said, why aren't you the chairman of a committee at this point? You've been in Congress for a long time. He's a Democrat from the South. And he said to me, I can't raise enough money to get a leadership position because the leadership has to see that you're, and the party has to see that you are raising X amount of money. So he's not going to be a leader. And that's all right. I mean, that he's not going to be a leader. But the point is, it's so in place that these people are doing this all the time. It takes them away from doing those things. But I still don't think they'd be reading the healthcare bill, to be honest with you, because it's just there's too much to it. I think they have enough people, members of Congress, not all 435 will do that. Eric Rooney, they should record the bills as audiobooks. Then there's no excuse to read it, right?
I love that.
Right. But falling asleep at the wheel deaths would happen much more quickly. And then the last one is from Electorate Now. Whoa, the wise and condescending at Michael Schur is on TYT Live. Catch you guys tomorrow.
Okay?
Yours.
No,
I like Michael Schur.
Yeah, I do too, but you know.
He is a little condescending.
Sometimes. But only when he's right.
I saw someone and my phone died.
That was ironic.
During the break, I was reading a tweet and my phone died just as I read. Someone who had a duck in their Twitter handle said, Michael Schur and Brett Ehrlich are sporting the Mario and Luigi beards.
It's nice.
Today. I grew out this beard because I just did a Facebook original that you will see sometime in the near future. You know how they took down those racist monuments in New Orleans?
Yep.
I do a sing-along song, Johnny Cash style, similar to I've Been Everywhere Man, where I tell you where you can find all the other racist monuments in America.
Brett's a funny man.
So keep an eye out for that.
That's not just funny. That's smart
it's
and clever.
Smart.
And,
yeah, definitely.
Because I don't think he's funny, but I do think he's smart and he's
that's
clever.
That's so condescending, Michael.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. Come back in a half hour. I won't be here.
Do you have member shout-outs?
I do. I'm sure I have member shout-outs. That was one of the things that I was going to do.
I don't know how to do it. Hit this twice.
What? Right.
And then go
to
there.
The member shout-outs.
We are really winning right now.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I like member shout-out. We can do them after the next break. Let's do it after the next break.
Member shout-out. We got. I have two.
Go,
do it.
Go.
All right. Helen Mendoza, Jonathan Usher. Helen Mendoza, Jonathan Usher, thank you for being members. Of course, this could not go on without you and everybody else who's a member. So really, thank you.
All right, let's get right into it. Michael Flynn is in hot water, the former National Security Council advisor to the president who was fired, resigned, I think is the term. Elijah Cummings appeared to announce the documents that he is releasing that incriminate Michael Flynn.
I would like to announce today that I'm releasing three new documents. First, I'm releasing a letter that was sent directly to General Flynn on October 8, 2014, from the Office of General Counsel at the Defense Intelligence Agency, his former agency. This letter explicitly warned General Flynn, as he entered retirement, that the Constitution prohibited him from accepting any foreign government payments without advance permission. Second, I'm releasing a now unclassified and redacted version of a letter that the Defense Intelligence Agency originally sent to our committee in classified form on April 7, 2017. This new DIA letter counters the suggestion made by General Flynn's attorney on Tuesday that General Flynn followed the appropriate procedures, and let me quote it directly. DIA did not locate any records referring or relating to Lieutenant General Flynn's receipt of money from a foreign source. End of quote. I don't care what his lawyer says. There is no such document saying that he requested permission to get money, to get the money, or a document saying that he received it. It also says this, and I quote, DIA did not locate any records of Lieutenant General Flynn seeking permission or approval for the receipt of money from a foreign source, end of quote. Third and finally, Today, I'm releasing a letter that we received from the Inspector General of the Department of Defense announcing that they, too, are now launching their own investigation of General Flynn.
Wow.
Yeah, so those are the documents that came forward. There is speculation. Also, folks are bringing up the idea that the White House does or should have access to some of these documents that would incriminate Mike Flynn, who faces up to 5 years in prison for felony charges. Here is Ned Price, the former senior director of the National Security Council.
Sean Spicer says, hey, look, this is someone who had dozens of conversations on any given day with foreign officials. That was a part of his responsibilities. It is not realistic to expect officials within the White House to try to sift through the various conversations and communications he may have had. What do you make of that part of their argument?
Well, I actually don't disagree with that element of it, but I think that here is a red herring. What the White House could easily produce is the information that Mike Flynn copped to, or as the case may be, did not admit to when he was submitting his vetting paperwork to be National Security Advisor. It's a very simple question. Did Mike Flynn admit on that paperwork that he accepted money from the Russian government? If he did not, was it willful? And if that's the case, it sounds like he is subject to a felony that, as I understand it, could land him up to 5 years in prison.
Hmm. There you go, Mike Flynn.
What thanks, do you think, Michael? Jeez, it's Schumer? Not me. What do I think? I mean, I think this is, listen, the Republicans already, in their ridiculous ways, are coming after this as oversight by the Obama administration, that they should have known this. It's their fault that Flynn is in this hot water because they were privy to mm-hmm. the same information. They let it slide. They didn't elevate him.
They didn't make him. Right. They fired him.
Right.
They got rid of him because he would do stuff like this. He was the one who just would do things. He would go around chain of command and he would say, up yours, I'm going to go do what I want to do. And he would say things like, bring me information confirming my pre-existing biases. I don't care what the facts are. He is that kind of guy, it seems.
Right.
And this is exactly in line with that.
His passion, a lot of people thought that his passion during the election was out of vindictiveness towards the Democrats who did that to him. Mm-hmm. And they did that to him because they found this stuff out about him.
Right.
All the things that he does. He tells half a story. He goes around their backs and he might be going to jail. And he is, I mean, we were all, except for Brett, so I guess that's two out of the three of us, in Cleveland for the Republican convention.
You're right, I wasn't there.
Yeah, you weren't there.
Yeah. I'm very lucky that you weren't.
We heard, he was the first person that I remember anyway, yeah. May have predated that, lock her up, right? I didn't hear it on the trail, I didn't hear it anywhere else until he said it. Mm-hmm. And the irony is, who might be locked up?
Yeah, that there is irony there. So look, the lobbying work that he did on behalf of Turkey, that's very clearly political. There's no question about it. You are receiving money from a foreign country to do work for them. The RT stuff, though, is a little more, I'm not saying I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'm playing devil's advocate on the show, just for the sake of this conversation. Look, I think that something like that is a little murkier because I mean, I used to do segments on RT years and years and years ago before even knowing that RT would become like this political issue. And Alona Minkowski, who's an excellent reporter, had a show at that time, and I was one of her correspondents. And we would talk about all sorts of things like drug policy, justice system in America, things that we talk about here on The Young Turks regularly. And I was a regular, and as a result, they decided to start paying me. Now, it was small beans. I'm sure it was nothing even remotely close to what Flynn made.
It's more beans than the average Russian gets from the government.
Well, probably, yeah.
Which is actual beans.
Literal beans. Yeah. Sorry,
But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because if I were ever to run for office, or if I were ever to do something that would make me an elected official, I wouldn't even list this as getting money from a foreign government because it wouldn't even like, I wouldn't even realize it. You see what I'm saying? I wouldn't even think about it.
Right, but National Security Advisor is different than running for Congress.
No, I get it.
Know, or Assembly or President, right?
And, yeah.
And in terms of what you have to disclose, and you would, of course, if you ran for president, that would come up. But
this
whole,
would come up, though? Me working for RT in 2009?
Opposition research absolutely would come up.
I would never run for office.
It would be followed by, it would be specifically Kremlin-backed RT network.
Right,
is how it
exactly.
Would be.
But the point is that to me, it's as egregious as all of it, because he knew that he had to. disclose it.
That's right. Didn't. He was told, exactly, in 2014, he was told, like, you're not to receive this foreign money, and he went ahead and did it anyway, which is why he's wrong. He's wrong, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'm just playing devil's advocate, because I think in some cases, especially if you work in government or you're a public figure, you get asked to do speaking engagements and you get paid for it, right? And so I could see how someone might get paid by RT and not even realize that that would be problematic in the future if they're, you know, part of the White House.
Right. It's a matter of disclosure, and I think you're being fair, but I think the truth is the truth, and he didn't disclose this. And then later he wanted to register as a foreign agent, right? That's a problematic thing. So this guy has a consistent record of omitting when he knew he had to do it and then coming in and trying to clean it up afterwards, and it's not working this time.
All right, let's move on.
Let's drop Mike.
God, how is this sitting out there?
It was right there. Well, you blew it with let's pull out of the NAFTA story, too. You didn't even get it when I said that.
I'm generally pretty dumb.
Yeah, I know.
Speaking of dropping generals, nope, that's not good either. Okay. Donald Trump, the president of the United States, has floated the idea of breaking up the President Donald Trump has floated the idea of breaking up the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, but it was a weird way that he did it. So he made this declaration that sanctuary cities should no longer get funding from the federal government. And there was an injunction placed on that by Judge Williams Orrick III from the North District of Virginia. In response to that, North District of California. In response to that, President Trump said, there are many people that want to break up the Ninth Circuit. It's outrageous. However, Trump misidentified Orrick as a judge on the Ninth Circuit, when in fact the Sanctuary Cities case would only move up to the Ninth Circuit if the government chose to appeal Orrick's decision.
That's weird. I thought Trump would have a very clear idea on how the courts work and where this particular judge comes from. It's weird that he would make strong statements about something that he knows nothing about. Look, here's the thing. There have been talks or attempts to break up the Ninth Circuit in the past. Apparently, like, for the last 70 years, this has come up over and over again. But the issue here is more about how Trump wants to do it in response to not getting everything he wants handed to him by these federal judges. That's not how a system of checks and balances works.
Right. It seems like the instinct he would have would be like, you told me no, so I'm going to break up the fundamental underpinnings of whatever your position is. It also does fit with him that he would have no idea what he's talking about.
But you also don't know what difference it would make if they broke it up, right? I mean, it would still go to, the appeal would still
go to
a circuit that's based, you know, made up mostly of these judges. And the notion that he would then be able to just fill whatever the new circuit was with his, like create the Trump circuit, that's not going to happen. That's not going to fly in Congress. I don't know the process of this, but I think it would be met with a lot of difficulty.
His intentions seem very dictatorial, right? It's the kind of stuff, like, do you see what I'm saying? Because, look, you're right. If he were to break up the Ninth Circuit, it's not even ensured that he would get what he wants, right? But I don't think he realizes that, and you know what his intentions are. His intentions are to make it easier for the executive branch to get exactly what they want, exactly what he specifically wants with these executive orders. This is the kind of stuff that we criticize other countries for.
Right. Well, and 20th century fascist Europe changed the courts, right? What did they do? They took a hold of the judicial system or judiciary in those countries, totally changed them, stacked them, and ended it, right? And so that, to me, I mean, it wasn't as cut and dried as that, but that's basically what happened. That's an essence of fascism.
Yeah. He's talking about this judge shopping thing, but we have the Supreme Court to kind of be the end of. You go find a court that is more friendly to what you think you want to have happen. They make a judgment one way or another. Sometimes they say, no, sorry, even though we're supposed to be the friendliest court to you, we still are a court, and we've decided against letting this move forward. It would take 60 votes in an act of Congress to do any of this whatsoever, and they wouldn't be able to get this.
It is also pretty interesting to hear those on the right talk about the importance of states' rights only when it's convenient for them and when it's convenient for them to get what they want, right? So same-sex marriage, for instance, we should leave it up to the states. We should leave it up to the states. Well, when it comes to the issue of sanctuary cities or sanctuary states, isn't that a states' rights issue? Yeah. I mean, if they genuinely believe in states' rights. And the fact of the matter is they don't. They use that argument only when it's convenient for them.
Yeah.
And how great would it be if the new court with Gorsuch on it, if it gets to that, and Gorsuch is like, no, you're crazy, this is wrong.
You know,
just that, for Neil Gorsuch to sort of deliver the ultimate blow on some of this stuff in the Muslim ban, I don't know that it would obviously happen. I don't think it's going to get there, but that would be just amazing.
I do love the Donald Trump quote where he said, everybody immediately runs to the Ninth Circuit, and we have a big country. We have lots of other locations.
Oh, do
but
we?
They immediately run to the Ninth Circuit because they know that's like semi-automatic.
That's our president, guys. That is the president of the United States.
Semi-automatic. Yeah, like,
we have lots of other locations. He sounds like he's a mattress store. Right?
We'll beat anyone's advertised judgment. No, your mattress is free. That might be a West Coast thing.
It
all right,
might be. You're we've killing got me, it, Brett.
It's 3:45 on the West Coast, and we've got to take a break. So we will be right back with the very hotly promised cocaine in your pants story. Also, alien hotlines. And it is a political story. Stick with us. Welcome back, everybody, to the last few minutes of hour two. I think we saved the best, most entertaining stories for last. But first, Michael has some announcements.
I do indeed. So first of all, want to thank some donors. We have this tytnetwork.com/go trying to raise a ton of money, but for a good cause, to get reporters hired here at TYT. We're at like $1.78 million, and that's a lot.
Wow.
$1,783,815.
And that's all going to me?
That's all goes to Brett, which is cool. Today, thank $27. You. Ian from Louisiana, thank you so much. $27. Maria from Connecticut, $50. Courtney from California, and $100. Freddie from Texas. Thank you all. Keep doing it. You can go to tytnetwork.com/go. There is also one thing that I want to tell you, which is we got a couple of tweets. I'll read them very quickly. There was some defense of me, so thanks for that. But Al Cool writes, Flynn, when he hid background info, he was open to blackmail. He belongs to them. That's the trouble with Trump's stupidity. Not disagreeing with that at all. I mean, that's what you have is what you expose yourself to and what you allow yourself to happen when you do those things, which is why a flawed candidate to my left. Heiserberg, how about we just impeach Donnie Tiny Hands and drag as many cabinet members down with him as possible? Yeah, but I
know and I understand that people want him impeached, but then what? Like, then we have Pence?
Better. Pence is better. Pence is horrible. He's a terrible person. He's the last person I want to be president, second to last. I mean, he would be better because he...
Wouldn't he be more effective, though?
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's very hard for somebody like, as Ford proved, as Johnson did when he was first became president after Kennedy, it's hard to just come in and be effective after a president right away. But yes, there's a chance that he would because... But here's the thing. He's been so ineffective as vice president. He was supposed to be everything that was supposed to, this is our liaison to Congress, right?
Right.
This is a guy that was beloved by Congress. But to the combination of him and Tom Price at Health and Human Services, worry, this is going to be a breeze to get rid of Obamacare. And then what happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
He can't get anywhere with them. And it's, maybe you could say you're right, and maybe it's because of Trump too. But I think that this guy is irresponsible. He's an embarrassment, this Donald Trump. And you can, and people would know how to deal with Mike Pence.
But you're right. But also think about how the fact that he's such a clown and he doesn't really think about what he's gonna do before he does it. Like that has stopped him from implementing certain policies like the Muslim ban, right? So he's a clown, so he's constantly talking about how he wants to ban Muslims. And that language allowed the judges to block the travel ban when they said, no, it's not about Muslims, it's just about travel and keeping the country safe.
Right.
So like someone like Mike Pence, I would argue, might be more tactful.
You're right. He would be. But I still don't think that would have. But listen, there are things that you give up. But I think that if you're honest about it, somebody who isn't Donald Trump is a better president. I mean, that's just, but you know, to Heisenberg's point, impeach Donnie Tiny Hands and then get to the, and leave the cabinet. You don't impeach him until bad things start happening to the cabinet members and other people so that you have the Republicans in Congress against the president. So This is all part of that process. Quickly, we got to get to Brett. I am Sock. Can you just register as a foreign agent for no reason? Might as well just to cover your ass. I'm picking New Zealand. You can pick New Zealand. I am Sock, but Scott Brown is the ambassador to New Zealand, so you might want to reconsider and think of that he's going to be a different country.
No nuclear in New Zealand. Learn that in trivia. Okay, here we go. So, President Trump set up the voice hotline. That is for victims of immigration crime engagement. Here's what he said in the State of the Union, or here's what he said in his joint address to Congress announcing voice.
And we must support the victims of crime. I have ordered the Department of Homeland Security to create an office to serve American victims. The office is called VOICE, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. We are providing a voice to those who have been ignored by our media and silenced by special interests. Joining us.
So we have a hotline in the White House for women who work at Fox News who are currently being sexually harassed or sexually assaulted? Because I really care about victims of that type of crime.
Well,
so doesn't seem like he does, though.
Yes, okay, all that. This is so amazing what happens. So that collective groan in the audience of the joint session of Congress was because it seems like just a way to call in and rat out anyone who's brown because you think they did something wrong. Essentially.
Yeah.
So it was classified essentially as an alien hotline. Well, let's look at this tweet and how people have responded. Have you spotted any space aliens? Call Trump's criminal alien hotline immediately. So people have started with hashtag alien day. People have started trolling this. So there's that one. There's another one saying surrounded by patriots calling Trump's stupid hotline reporting crimes by aliens. People have started calling it in. God bless America. Make every day alien day until this hotline does its job in full. And so finally, Libby, who has I can't even today, which was my favorite handle. 855-48-VOICE, the legal alien crime reporting line just called to report cow abductions by flying saucers. They hung up on me. Amazing. So it was originally an illegal alien hotline. And so they're like, well,
it's so good.
Yeah. And as is Alien versus Predator, I really like this, this masthead. Yeah. I don't know what more we could say about that.
I think it's great. And every once in a while, the internet delivers. And today they delivered.
Yeah. So good. All right. And then one final story for the grab bag. Coke on a plane. Usually when you're on a plane and you order Coke, they're like, here's a Coke. And they'll probably charge you $2.50 because they're charging for everything nowadays. This is a different kind of Coke that was found by people on a plane. Let's take a look. Both men who were on a plane from the Dominican Republic to New York allegedly had drugs taped to their legs under their clothing. And one man taped the drugs to his back. Let's take a look at the tweet from the CPB New York City. These guys had taped bags of cocaine to their legs.
Yeah.
Not one, but two busted out of their pants. Good job, guys. Good job, CPB, having a little tongue-in-cheek humor.
You can get those jeans at $4.25 at Nordstrom. Dude. The cocaine just already put in.
All told, these guys had hundreds of thousands of dollars in cocaine attached to their legs. This is the statement.
But isn't that how people bring it in? Like, didn't eight other people not get detected on that flight?
I'm sure people have done the same thing and it hasn't gotten detected and they've gotten away with it. It's so incredibly bold to do it, right? I just recently went to Mexico with my family and I was talking to my husband about how much it's going to suck to go to Mexico and not be able to take our weed with us. And so I was like, I don't know, should I just try to like put a little nug in my bra or something?
No.
And I was too scared. I'm like, no, I'm not going to put the nug in my bra. Bad idea. But these guys, they're like, psh, I don't care.
No, you're supposed to put it in a little plastic bag and stick it to the bottom of your shampoo when you check baggage.
I've heard about
that's
that.
That's what, I don't know, I saw that once. Would you ever smuggle drugs into America?
He's a straight edge dude.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, no.
It's interesting.
I mean, first of all, if you get caught, look how ridiculous the tweets are.
Right, yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, and first of all, I also would have put it on the inside of my pants, not on the outside like they had it, because it was just...
No, they had it under their pants,
no,
Michael.
Come on, Brett.
Come on. This is the best. It says, this latest seizure demonstrates our CPB officers being ever vigilant in protecting the United States from the distribution of these illicit drugs. Ever vigilant? These guys are like, has a giant cocaine hunchback. Here's another one. Let's do that last graphic at 19. Look at this. This is, come on.
Wow.
We noticed he was smuggling drugs because he could not move his legs.
He's a goalie.
What is going on? Wow.
It's so good. That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us today. More in hour two. See you then.